At about this time, the British fleet neared St. Petersburg. At the beginning of 1801, Britain's principal advantage over France was its naval superiority. The Royal Navy searched neutral ships trading with French ports, seizing their cargoes if they were deemed to be trading with France. As we have seen, the eccentric Russian Tsar Paul broke with the British and established a league of armed neutrality comprising Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Prussia, and Russia to enforce free trade with France. The British viewed the League to be very much in the French interest and a serious threat to their own. The League was hostile to the British blockade, and its existence threatened the supply of timber and naval stores from Scandinavia. Paul I's assassination and the removal of Russia from the League of Armed Neutrality was a clear signal to the British to attack the Danish port at Copenhagen. Sir Hyde Parker and his deputy Vice Admiral Nelson held the British fleet waiting off the northern Danish coast for the signal that Paul was in fact dead. As soon as that signal was received on 2 April 1801, the British fleet attacked, taking the Danes by surprise, killing or seriously wounding 1,600 Danish sailors, capturing 1,800, along with two Danish ships sunk, one exploded, and 12 others captured. And within days, the League of Armed Neutrality was dead, and Baltic waters, once again, were closed to trade with the French. And the long-term implications are clear. With the succession passed to Paul's son, the 23-year-old Alexander I, Russia was now firmly on the side of the British in the war against Napoleon. Later events would prove the pivotal role played by the British Secret Service's direct hand in the assassination of Paul in favor of his son. For Alexander I would emerge as the leader of the Russian forces that would ultimately liberate France from Napoleon. Until now, we have spoken very little about codes. Cryptology is a study and art that has been around for thousands of years. Classic cryptology is using ciphers written by hand on paper. Ancient civilizations have been using simple ciphers to convey sensitive information since the early years of writing. The Romans and the Greeks made use of ciphers in conveying military information about troop movements and strengths. Today, while the art of cryptology has become infinitely more complicated, and ciphers are now created on computers rather than by hand, the ability to send a secret message containing sensitive information retains at least as important today as it was thousands of years ago. For as long as there have been ciphers, there have also been code breakers, or people who use their intellect to break codes used by the enemy, primarily with the idea of gaining their side an advantage over the enemy, whether militarily, economically, politically, or otherwise. The Napoleonic Wars, fought between Napoleon's French Empire and a group of European allies, lasted from 1805 to 1815. Codes were not originally a huge part of that war. But as time progressed and ciphers began to be used more and more in French communications, there was one man that helped immensely to turn the military advantage against the French. Georges Scovel was born in 1774, and his apparent destiny was to become an engraver. His life took a major turn when he enlisted in the British Army and began a life trying to climb the difficult ranks of the military. As was customary at the time, he purchased a position as the head of a cavalry division, earning himself a small amount of honor before it became too financially draining, and he was forced to sell the position off and settle back into the lower, less prestigious ranks. Scovel was extremely motivated, always working hard to please his superiors in hopes of being noticed and promoted. While working as an assistant to Arthur Wellesley, he found his niche as a codebreaker and ended up contributing more to the success of the British military than he would have ever imagined. Mark Urban's book, The Man Who Broke Napoleon's Codes, begins at the Battle of Corunna in 1809, painting a dreary picture of the British campaign on the Iberian Peninsula. With Scovel's help with embarkment logistics, the British succeeded in retreating back to Britain, but they suffered a demoralizing loss. Under the lead of a new general, Arthur Wellesley, Scovel returned to the Iberian Peninsula in May of 1809, acting as an aide. While the British military was effectively trained in battle, they lacked management to make effective use of intelligence. One particular example was the battles of Oporto and Salamonde. The British military, through a daring surprise attack on the French, had managed to capture the city of Oporto and push through to Salamonde. With the French on the retreat, Wellesley received a tip from a Spanish military general who knew the lay of the land and warned him about a possible escape route for the French. Partly because of arrogance, partly because of a distinct lack of organized methods for handling intelligence, the escape route was never closed, and Wellesley led the British army along an empty trail that allowed the French to escape with most of their own army intact. Realizing the need for a central means of communication within the British military, Wellesley promoted Scovell to the post of head of communications and intelligence. It was in this new position that Scovell got his first experience with Napoleon's codes.